You know the sentence with the dog? The one that uses every letter? The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog? That one? Well, our situation was nothing like that. The rotting dog kept running around us in circles, running and running and snapping its jaws. Its sagging snout was being used as an express taxi for a family of maggots, a huge extended family of maggots. Some of them fell out with each leap the dog leapt over us.
It was so cute!
Clearly, just excited to see us. I put out my hand and the dog came up to sniff it. Though I'm not convinced the sniffing did any good. I could feel the air the dog sucked in through its nostrils come back out through cavities in its cheeks.
So cute.
The dog sniffed Amy's hand and I felt, well, a little conflicted, to be honest. I mean, first instinct upon meeting a dog is always, hello doggy, sweet doggy. But there were maggots spilling like drool towards her feet as we stood there. I could see the lungs through the dog's ribcage heaving with effort. It didn't feel too much like a good doggy moment, but Amy can get along with any animal. I figured I ought to make my peace too.
Vera didn't look too keen on meeting the rotting dog, but she introduced herself all the same. We both thought something was wrong, at first, because the second he sniffed her hand, his head snapped up to attention. His snout and ears, sorry, no, ear, pointed as sharply as they could toward what I assumed to be the west. There was no sun there, so it was kind of impossible to tell. Everything was just illuminated. Pretty sure the light was coming from below, like a light-up dance floor. Only there was no fluctuation in the color of the light, and it illuminated our surroundings completely, rather than just the outlines and silhouettes of sweaty bodies and bad clothes and the occasional abandoned straw. The dog looked like it was trying to bark for a while, but no sound came out. Then he set out at a dead run, pun intended, to the west, or
west,
in air quotes.
The dog sniffed at my hand, but something stole his attention from me. His head snapped up like a soldier to attention, and he howled. It was a long, sorrowful note that spoke of longing and rotting and an undercurrent of joy that just made the sadness seem sadder. I looked at Amy, but she didn't seem to hear it. When the rotting dog started to run, we looked at each other, shrugged, and ran after him. It wasn't like we were going to find our own way around this new world, right? So we followed. When the dog stopped running, he was just a tiny black smudge in the distance. Amy and I slowed, but didn't stop. It looked like he was a million miles away, but we reached him in about 7 steps. We weren't even out of breath when we approached him. There was the dog, of course, who we had just chased. He was still and staring up. There was another dog, no, the same dog, just at a different time? Before the age, before the rot. The young and complete version of himself was asleep, curled up next to someone else. Not a dog, a human. A human who was also asleep, breathing thinly. He was wearing a buttoned-up sherwani, deep red with golden and white embroidery. I got the feeling he had been there, asleep, for a long time, though neither his clothing nor his face showed any signs of wrinkling. He looked young, actually. Older than us, sure, but no older than his 30s. He had dark brown hair that looked like it wanted desperately to curl closer to his eyes, but wouldn't dare.
I followed the eyes of the rotting dog, staring where he stared. I couldn't see anything at first, and I thought maybe his eyes had just stopped working or something. I mean, he was obviously very old, right? But then, there was a person there in the distance. Not distant enough that we should have been able to overlook them like we had, but far enough to be an awkward, I'd have to yell to speak to them distance. They were sort of hunched over and wore all white, so they really blended in with our celestial surroundings. I couldn't see their face beyond the white hood they were wearing. I turned to Vera to see if she'd noticed them too, but she was busy looking at the sleeping man.
He looked younger than I'd thought. I mean, he looked my age, or younger. I couldn't really tell, but I thought I could see a layer of dust on his clothes. He looked peaceful. I wanted to believe he really was peaceful, but something told me he hadn't chosen to be here. His fists were clenched by his sides, the only sign of any strain against the state. The rotting dog came trotting back up to him, sniffing around as best he could and then curling up to rest in the same spot that the past version of him was laying.
I walked a step closer to the person in white. I didn't want to get too close, but before I even could, I heard a whisper. It was really clear, like the words were just coming from my own brain, even though they weren't in my voice, and I had no reason to be thinking them. "Milo likes you," the words said. The voice saying them sounded so familiar. There was a spike in my blood for a second, and I thought, "Mabel?" And I reached instinctively to pull Vera closer, but then I realized, no, not Mabel. I heard more words. "You'll have to keep jumping. You don't stop here. You don't stop for a while." I didn't really get it. This time I did reach for Vera. I asked if she was hearing all this, but she looked at me like, "What are you talking about?" Just me and the voice then.
Amy pointed to a figure I hadn't noticed before. She looked like she was concentrating on something that I couldn't hear. I wondered if this was how it felt for her to be kept out of the time loop conversations I occasionally had with Nolan and Mabel. It kinda sucked. I decided not to bother her with questions of what was going on just yet, even though I itched to know. She'd fill me in when she was ready.
"We brought you here so you can retrieve something you're going to store here later. He's been holding on to it," the voice said.
I was so frustrated about not being able to place the voice that I didn't even mind that it was making no sense. There was a long silence, my mind returning to its natural solitary state. I told Vera what was happening, what the hooded figure said.
Things were starting to get brighter. Like, physically, not intellectually. Intellectually, not a thing made sense about what the figure had said. Physically, though, the clouds or whatever we were standing on, the white expanse surrounding us, took on a golden tinge. It got brighter by the second until it hurt my eyes. It was getting warmer under our feet, too. We had to figure things out quickly and then jump, preferably before getting burned. I walked back over to the sleeping man, crouching beside him. I reached out and turned his hands palm up, his fingers still closed into fists. He didn't stir, and I don't think he could feel anything at all in his slumber. I went more slowly than I probably had time for, trying to be gentle as I opened the fist nearest me.
The silver metal glinted back up at us from his now open palm. He held the vial up to Vera like an offering, like it was a holy thing rather than a curse. Somehow his face looked crueler now that what he held was in plain sight.
There was no blood in it. It was the same vial that had become such a picture of my life. There was no mistaking that. I mean, of course, there was, because how likely is it that only one of this particular kind of vial had ever been made, but I could feel it. It was one and the same, but there was no blood in it. It wasn't broken either, though Amy had smashed it to bring me back to the land of the living.
Vera reached over the vial and opened his other fist. I'm not sure whether she did that because she wanted to hope for something else to take instead, or if she was just genuinely curious.
It was both, but his other hand held nothing. I picked up the vial again. Even empty and bloodless, it felt heavy. I put the chain around my neck.
The gold tinge turned into a gold scorch mark, toasting the clouds like marshmallows over a campfire. I hoped whoever was roasting us didn't like their marshmallows blackened, but it felt like we were headed that way. Still, even with the bottoms of my feet starting to fry, I had to know who the voice belonged to. I approached the figure again, but no matter how many steps I took towards them, they always seemed the same distance. It was maddening, and I couldn't tell if I was flushed with frustration or heatstroke. Probably both.
The hooded figure looked to us. I could see a smile playing at their lips, the only part of them that was visible until they dropped their hood.
It was Kiara? The voice I had heard in my head, so familiar, it was her. But there was no way.
but it was her.
Kiara stood before us, up here in the burning clouds, and she smiled like it was a normal Tuesday occurrence. I didn't even know if it was Tuesday, let alone why Kiara would be here, how she would be here. But we didn't have time to unfold it here. The clouds were starting to burst into flame around us, leaping up everywhere. A big, heavy-looking door sprang up with the flames to our left, and I grabbed Amy's hand and we ran through it.